Welcome to Funding and Disrupting, the most in-depth business podcast for companies looking to raise money and the investors who fund them. Every episode, we interview a funded founder, plus the investor who funded them, to get the real story of how it all came together. If you're searching for funding for a disruptive technology or business, or you're searching for the best companies to invest in, then you've come to the right place. This episode of Funding and Disrupting is brought to you by Aura Collective, a leading tech PR and marketing firm. Let's get funding and disrupting.
Hello, everyone. I'm your host, Keith Herman, and welcome to Funding and Disrupting. Today, we have two exciting guests. The first is Stefan Schütze, who is one of the managing partners of C3 Venture Capital. C3 Venture Capital is a venture capital company focused on managing early stage venture funds, which invests in exceptional technology companies worldwide. C3's mission is, among other things, to accelerate growth, development, and especially adoption of blockchain technology. Towards this mission, C3 manages the C3 VC Fund, which is partly funded by Block One and offers developers and entrepreneurs the funding they need to create community-driven businesses leveraging crypto and blockchain. C3 VC Fund focuses on early and growth stage technology companies, and it is managed by C3 Management GmbH, operates worldwide, and is located in Frankfurt, Germany. And our second guest is Dirk Luth, the co-founder and co-CEO at Upland. Upland is a property trading game paired with a centralized economy. Players buy, sell, trade, and develop virtual properties that are based on real-world addresses. Blockchain technology ensures true ownership for the players. Uplanders collect in-game currency as a reward for their ownership and for the completion of collections that group together a predefined amount of properties. Upland recently received funding from C3 Venture Capital, and today we will find out how it all happened. Stefan, Dirk, welcome to Funding and Disrupting. How are you today?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having us. Excited to be on and to spend a few minutes to explain, of course, everything, how we are working together, and you know, of course, what Upland is actually doing.
Yeah, sure. Thanks also from my side here. Thanks that you having us here, and yeah, ready to start and to hear your questions.
Wonderful, wonderful. So, Stefan, let's start with you and learn about your earlier years. Why don't you tell us where were you born? Where were you when you were growing up, and like what were some of your interests as a kid?
Yeah, maybe. Some of you from the visitors here can I was grew up in a GDR, which was the eastern part of Germany. So I'm basically a child of the socialism. So the first 18 years of my life, I spent in Magdeburg, which is a town in the middle of Germany, but was of part of the eastern part of Germany. So, and after the reunion took place, I decided to study law. So it's quite nice that I experienced these both systems. So first 18 years of socialism, and then I turned immediately into the capitalism, and then I decided to study law. And after finishing my law exam, I jumped right in the startup business and started my first job in 2000. January 1st, 2000, in a venture capital company located in Berlin. So I would say my childhood was great. So I didn't miss something, but after the reunion took place, I learned a lot more about the world, because when we was born in GDR, maybe some of you know, we was not allowed to travel across the world, so we could only travel in the eastern part of Europe. So I was in Hungary, Bulgaria, Czech Republic, in these countries, and then I experienced the other part of the world. And luckily now my wife is Canadian, so the funny part is I grew up in the GDR, and now I'm married with a Canadian wife, yeah, so a Canadian citizen. So that is, in a nutshell, my life from 18 to, I know I turned 50 just in July, so from my childhood until 50.
Well, happy birthday, and thank you for sharing that. So how about you, Dirk? Tell us a little bit about your childhood. And I'm curious if Upland was something that you actually had thought about as a kid, or maybe had some seeds planted there. Tell us about your childhood.
Yeah, so my background is I'm also originally from Germany, but I live in Silicon Valley now for 14 years. And actually, when I studied, so I lived actually in the U.S. my childhood, in France and in Germany. But I'm an economist. And I wrote my PhD about private and state-controlled currencies. So there was a big research topic, and where I went really deep into, what it makes sense when a state hands out a currency, or when maybe private institutions do that. We have that, like a long history that has happened, actually. So, and after I finished that PhD, I had the choice, to either say, okay, I go to the Central Bank of Europe to work, or maybe for the Federal Reserve in the US, but there's not a lot of employers. And while I was studying, I always had, I was always doing things on the side, like being very much entrepreneur. And at that time, then after I finished my PhD studies there, I decided actually to become an entrepreneur. I started two companies in Germany, which was the Financial Times of Germany, and another company in the fintech space, which I later on sold. But then in 2009, I decided with my wife together, big innovations are done in Silicon Valley. And we took our two little kids, just on our own, moved to Silicon Valley. And I started in actually altogether three companies in Silicon Valley. But the most interesting thing is what has happened to me then late 2010. I stumbled over the white paper of Satoshi Nakamoto. Maybe for the listeners not aware, that Satoshi Nakamoto wrote this white paper about Bitcoin, which eventually became Bitcoin. When I read that, because I said, this is incredible, because I thought when I was studying about private state controlled currencies, I always thought, never going to use that again, because it somehow was very academic. And I said, oh wow, this is really going to change everything. And that's since then I could not let it go again, and that's how I got really hooked into the whole blockchain world, decentralized thinking, and so on.
Interesting. So I'm curious, who would you say was the single greatest influence on you growing up? And how do you think that helped you become who you are today?
I had actually, it was maybe hard to say, but I have a very mixture of, of course, family was always very impactful. So my father was strict, he was, teaching me how to do businesses and so on. My mother, she was actually a teacher. She was, and she was a very creative person. So that somehow influenced me, of course, to, become this mixture between, a business economy, economist, and, coming up with new ideas as an entrepreneur. So that is clearly what has influenced me. And then there are a few professors, probably not names, right, which actually were very inspiring for me to really go where people have not gone before. And that was really what was my number one inspiration, actually, from the professors from my university time.
Interesting. So, Stefan, let me ask you this. On paper, because we always do a little bit of research, it seems like you're a very methodical type person, somebody who, is very, structured in things that you do and maybe predictable. But for people that are interested in working with you, can you share with us some of your lighthearted and more fun side so that so that we know you're not all just about business? Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you are interested in for people that are, interested, or maybe some things that you find humorous?
Yeah, so I think as Dirk already knows, I'm a big football, or as you say in the United States, soccer fan. So I'm very into soccer, football, not only in Germany. I also watch across Europe, the leagues, the Premier League and the Spanish League. But I'm also a very big US sport. So I'm pretty much into the National Football League. I'm a big fan of the NFL. So when you ask my hobbies, it's all about sports. So I do a lot of sport, a lot of exercising. And my son and me, we are big fans of the NFL. So we was watching already games because sometimes the NFL comes over to Europe and plays in London. This year they play in Munich, so the Buccaneers against the Seahawks play in Munich. There was a big event in Germany, but we also have already watched games in London. And when I was in the States, I was in San Diego. I watched at this time when I was in San Diego, there was still a football team in San Diego. Right now it's not. I watched a game in San Diego. And also when I'm in Canada, where my wife lives in Toronto, I watched the Major League Baseball because the Toronto Blue Jays are the only team which are participating in a Major League Baseball. So yeah, all about sports and not only soccer and football, but also US sports is one of my biggest hobbies. And you can talk with me about 24 hours about this whole night, every day. So I'm always on. And yeah, Dirk knows this because Dirk is also a big soccer fan. He comes from Frankfurt. So Frankfurt has a big supporter base here in Germany and one of the big supporters teams here, and Frankfurt was very very successful over the last year, so I think Dirk is also cheering up in Silicon Valley for Frankfurt. Yeah, so we can also do a sports podcast, so to speak. Yeah,
yeah. So you share the same soccer team as your favorite team?
No, Dirk is Frankfurt. I'm not a Frankfurt supporter. I lived in Frankfurt for a couple of years, and our company is based in Frankfurt. Of course, I support Frankfurt with my as much as I can, but it's not my favorite team. I have another team here in the Bundesliga. I'm also happy when Frankfurt wins, of course.
Okay.
We tried to convert him, but we were not successful. So,
well, in the United States, you know, if you have a particular team, it's very, very. Most people don't support more than one team. So who's your favorite football team in the US?
Yeah, my son is a big a Seahawks fan, and I'm a big Green Bay Packers fan.
Ah, okay. Interesting. So you have two different teams, which is good. So you have a little bit of controversy every now and then. That's
exactly. but I'm also I like the 49ers, so hopefully when I visit Dirk in the Silicon Valley soon, maybe at some point I can also watch a game from the 49ers, but so far we don't have the time to visit each other there. But yeah, there are so much opportunities. Also the Golden State Warriors are playing there, so we will see. I think we will find time, and then hopefully we can bring it to a game. Yeah.
I can see that you like to stick with the winners. You picked all winning teams, so it's a good sign, and probably in terms of how you invest and you can pick winners. So
that's hopefully when we invest. Yeah.
Yeah. So okay, so Dirk, let's talk about Upland. Why don't you explain to us what Upland is all about and what you're trying to achieve with it? Because this is a really incredible project. And for a lot of listeners, this is probably an area that is relatively new. This is, I would say revolutionary is an understatement in terms of the potential. So I'm going to let you explain. Tell us what Upland's about and what it is you're trying to achieve.
Yeah, maybe I start out with the story, how we actually came up with the idea. So when I was working in blockchain, as I mentioned earlier, it's like we started in 2010, right? I myself, digging into it, and I'm just trying to understand. I remember very well in 2012, 2013, I went to a lot of investors and said, the world is going to be decentralized. And lots of them looked at me and said, what is this guy talking about? Right. So I was really quite early at that time, but learned a lot, right, doing that, because there was what I predominantly learned is that at the beginning, when a technology, comes up, it's very much a nerdy thing, right? I remember I was here in Silicon Valley, saw some events, at meetups, there were maybe 5 or 10 people in the room, talking about Bitcoin. There was not even Ethereum around. And was a very interesting time. But then in 2017, you know, we saw there was something some of your listeners might know. It was something called CryptoKitties, where people could buy, you know, virtual cats and do that. And I was thinking about exactly the same thing already two years before, not about cats, but creating unique goods on the blockchain in certain ways, which is, you know, today called NFTs. So, but what I also discovered during that time, I said, right now it's really just for nerds, for aficionados, people who actually, you know, are willing to go through pain, you know, who want to deal with private keys and wallets and all that stuff. I said, no, we want to do it differently. And then in 2018, I put myself together with my two co-founders, Manny Honigstein and Ines Zuckerman. We actually had a game night. They're both based here in Silicon Valley, originally from Israel. And we had actually game night. We were playing Monopoly, you know, and I think everyone knows that game. I've never met anyone who does not know the game. I said, what if we do the following? We take this inspiration of Monopoly. And that was also the time when we had actually Stranger Things scene. That was actually on Netflix. You know, there was a series where there was a parallel world. You said, okay, we take Monopoly, we take blockchain, and we take the parallel world, and let's create Upland. And then we launched and incorporated Upland.me, which stands for Metaverse, already in 2018, because our vision was to create really this parallel world. However, and at the end of the day, it should also become a platform, which we're actually in the process of doing right now. But we know no one is really born as a platform, and you have to convey things. And we said, okay, so what are the most important ingredients? We want to make it easy. We want to go where most of the people are, right? And we want to make it something really fun, all right? And they said, okay, Monopoly is probably the best inspiration we can have. To make it easy, you know, we need to probably be mobile first, because that's where people are. And the third thing is then that we need to do something, you know, fun, emotional. It's like, okay, the real world, that's where people connect to. And that's how basically Upland was born. And today we are very proud to say that we are the largest metaverse in terms of land owners. You know, when you take, you know, the three successors after us, you know, they're, you know, we're five times larger in because we have roughly almost 300,000 land owners, plus or minus, right now, which is huge for a blockchain application. We have iOS and Android app and so on. But maybe it's just quickly back, because at that time, okay, we conceptualized a little bit. We had a few friends. We were angel investors. We invested a little bit, you know, in our first, you know, coding efforts and so on. And we said, okay, now, you know, now we have a little bit of product we can actually show to venture capitalists, right, to investors. One important thing was also at that time, because the way we have built the app to make it really mass market friendly, so, you know, you can actually only use email and password to sign in and so on, we had certain restrictions where we were not able to use, you know, the technology was predominantly Ethereum, which was around there. We said, no, we need to work with a different blockchain. So we did some research and said, okay, what other blockchain can we use? And yeah, we came up to EOS, and then we said, okay, who can help us, you know, getting, you know, the company really to the next level? Who wants to do a seed funding? And then we did research, and then actually we found Stefan and his team. And maybe I hand over to Stefan how we get together, right? So I used my network. I was introduced to Stefan, and then Stefan, I think you took the first look, right?
Yes. So Stefan, let's find out here. When you learned about Upland, how much knowledge did you already have in this field? This is, you know, for a lot of people, this is, you know, uncharted water. So how much knowledge did you have in this area, and what were your initial thoughts of the project?
Yeah. As you have already said in the introduction, our largest limited partner, or our largest funding partner from our fund, was Block One.
Right.
And Block One is the developer of EOS.io. And so the investment criteria of the fund was from the beginning, this C3 One fund, that we invest in companies which using or adapt the EOS blockchain technology. So we was specialized in the sector, especially we focusing purely on blockchain technology startups. So, and when the deck from Upland came in, it kicks in immediately, because the first part of the investment criteria was met already because they was willing to use US blockchain. And secondly, the business model was obvious or clear for us because, as Dirk mentioned already, when you talk about Upland, you immediately have in mind Monopoly, the game Monopoly. And everybody knows Monopoly. And the idea that you can buy real properties, not like some kind of virtual properties, yeah, which are maybe in a not real world. So, but here you can pick properties in a real world, yeah, in real cities, like in San Francisco or Chicago or New York. This was very unique for us. And as we are focusing on blockchain technologies, and we are not looking in one specific sector, so we are not looking only in fintech or gaming or supply chain companies. So we are sector agnostic, so to speak, but the main part must that they use or adapt these blockchain technology. It was a great fit for us. And when we, at this point in 2018, it was our first contact, and then we invested, I think it was 18, 19, we invested in Upland. At this point, blockchain for us was mainly adoption was mainly taking over in the gaming industry. So for us was clear that gaming or gamification could be a big part for blockchain adoption. So and all this together makes it for us very clear that we need to invest here.
Dirk, this is an area that I understand, we the three of us understand, but for a lot of people who are listening, it may be a little difficult for them to understand how it is that they're actually buying something in the real world. So why don't you talk to us and maybe just drill down a little bit and explain the aspect of the tokenization and what the blockchain is used for and the fundraising mechanism to fund assets and how you actually end up owning something that's not inside your computer and actually really exists in the real world.
Yeah, it's a perfect blur, right? Somehow it's real, yeah. somehow it's unreal in a certain sense. So maybe just explain, you know, the flow of a user, how you get actually to a property. So when we say, so you can download Upland on iOS, Android, or you just use it on the web. And what you get actually is a map of San Francisco and or New York. We're currently live in 20 cities across the US, plus Rio de Janeiro and Porto. I can explain a little bit later why we have those cities around the globe so far. The idea is you get this map application. You zoom in pretty much how you used to do it on Google Maps or Apple Maps or so. But you zoom in very, to all the way down to the property border. And actually, we're using real-world puzzles. And then you can see actually a little square in San Francisco, or when it's, maybe more in the East Coast, it's not always squared, right? It's a little bit more, different shapes there. And you click on it and you can check it out, because we also integrated Google Street View. You can see what's actually there in the real world. And then it's super easy. You can go and purchase that. So we have an in-app currency, which is called Apex. So in order to purchase something, you need to exchange that, either via credit card or PayPal or via in-app purchase. And $1 represents 1,000 Apex. However, you can always start, because when you sign up for the first time, and everyone's actually allowed only to have one account, we forbid multi-accounting, but one account, you can go there and you have some free Apex where you can actually purchase, let's say, in quotation marks, some of the properties for free. And what is very important, because it's based on blockchain, blockchain has nature, it's true ownership. So when we hand over something to someone, then actually we cannot take it away from them anymore. That's just the nature of blockchain. And because that is, you truly own things, and you can sell things, which has a lot of implications what people actually do with it. But in Upland, we had actually the challenge of saying, okay, when people now, with the free money we're giving them, they buy something and then maybe they lapse, because they're not interested anymore, or they forgot about it or so, then we cannot take it away. When you think about it, when we're now selling San Francisco or New York, then you have a lot of ghost properties as such, right? So we came up with the idea is, okay, before you can actually truly own the properties, you have to become an uplander, right? At the beginning, you're only a visitor and you have a visa, right? So that means you have to renew your visa at least, you know, once a week, because if you don't do it, we're going to recycle all your assets again, right? So that's what makes it then so compelling. And once you have a net worth more than 10,000 UPEX equals more than $10, actually, you can go and you become an uplender, and then you keep actually your assets forever because you show that you're actually more engaged with the metaverse here. And they always get asked, what is the pricing structure? So we're using all public databases how to come up with the prices for a property. So they can be as low as, let's say, in Detroit, where properties are very cheap, like can be low as $3 or $5. But we also sold, let's say, the Rockefeller Center for $40,000.
So just for people that are listening, when Rockefeller Center, somebody buys that, what they own is they own Rockefeller Center within Upland. They don't actually own Rockefeller Center in the real world.
Yeah. So I have to be very precise.
Because that's...
They own the address where in real life the Rockefeller Center is, right? So that's clear, right? So we cannot use IP-wise, you know, we're going to say we're not selling that directly. So we're selling the addresses, right? Because it's the virtual layer on top of it, right? In real life, you find the Rockefeller Center. So I have to make that clear also, right? They're not buying any rights to the real world property or whatever, right? It's just the address they're buying at that moment.
So now let's just talk about this a little bit more. Tell us how big the market opportunity really is.
So the market opportunity for metaverse, I mean, there was a study from McKinsey for 2030. They said it's a $5 trillion, which is immense. And maybe also on the maybe concrete example of Upland, because people think, oh, well, this is just a game and, you know, there's nothing more to it. But at the end of the day, Upland is currently in the process of becoming a platform. Because the thing is, you can do so much more than just buying the properties. And as you said, you know, in your introduction, right now at the beginning, we gamified it with the mechanics of Monopoly, right? That you say, okay, you know, collect properties on the same street. And, you know, once you collect it, you earn a little bit income. You can increase the income when you collect more complicated or more rare properties, right? And so that's, of course, the first mechanic which is there. But then the next level is there, and why this the metaverse is such a huge opportunity is because people will do things in the metaverse. So for instance, in Upland, they can now start building, structures on their properties and run and operate shops there. And so that is what is important. But lots of people think, oh, you know, it's just about speculators. They're buying land cheap, trying to sell it to more expensive. But the truth is, in the metaverse, especially also in Upland, what we want to create is the metaverse of entrepreneurs, the metaverse of makers. That means you will be able to run and operate a business in Upland and where you can sell, like just in the real world, digital goods to other players. And you can do that either for our in-app currency Apex, or you can do that for US dollars. Give you an example is you can maybe start creating outside decor items. Yeah. So let's say like a virtual garden chair or water fountain or something, right? Well, how people want to beautify their properties. And they can do that in Upland and they can fire up that stores and other players come there then and purchase those goods which they desire to have. And this is just one example. We have, for instance, a partnership with the NFL Play Association also. They can also go into stadiums and purchase digital items from NFL players in the shops there, right? So for instance, a 3D jersey or, you know, football or whatever, especially the game balls of certain game balls, which are very rare, they can purchase them.
So in other words, when I'm inside Upland and I see these items that are for sale, I can actually click through, purchase it, and it gets delivered to my home. And next thing you know, I could actually have a physical jersey, not just a digital jersey, correct?
Yeah. So right now, of course, everything's digital. Right now, everything is an NFT. But we clearly have the vision, right, that in midterm, people will be able to purchase also real goods there, right? And it's going to mix out to that. It's not just a replication that you have some kind of an e-commerce store as such. Because that is what's also new about, because Metaverse has its origin from gaming. And when you think about it, so maybe you are first in the virtual world, maybe you buy a virtual jersey because you own that virtual jersey. I mean, it's not implemented, but that's how it's going to be. Now you can go in real life into the stadium, show your jersey maybe to somewhere and say, okay, because you have that virtual version, maybe you get discount for the real version, right? And then you can get the real version. And because now you bought the real version, you get a special QR code. Now you can go back into the virtual world, right? And do something, maybe another special thing with it, because now you're closing that loop, right? Between the virtual world and the real world.
Clearly, there's tremendous potential here. So, Stefan, from the investor's side, what do you feel would be the most beneficial for Uplin's growth?
The most beneficial is definitely that we explore other cities, also in other regions of the world. So as Dirk mentioned, right now our main marketplace, so to speak, is United States, as we have the most cities opened here. And then we have now explored Rio, and I think it was also sold out within a couple of hours. And also Porto, which was the first city in the EU. So I think...
You're talking in Portugal, correct?
Correct. And I think, as Dirk mentioned, we have now partnered with this larger institution like the NFL and bring more gamification tools into the game. But I think also important is to open up new cities. So it's also planned as on our list. We are very careful here because we would not offer too quick and too fast other cities. So we would limit the properties a bit. So and then also we want to look how does it work at the beginning, and now more and more we're exploring other countries and other regions, and we have a lot of potential collaboration partners in our pipeline. We cannot yet talk about it, but I think there is much more to come. So and as Dirk said, it's one of the best metaverses outside so far, as it's not only a game, and you can do so much more with Upland. And it's not only you buy a property and wait, and maybe you sell it for a higher price to other gamers or players. But you earn money, of course, when you are a property holder. You get a rent when people run over your properties or your addresses. So you also earn UPX over the time. So it's not just you sit there and wait. So you can earn money also when you play. And I think there are a lot of opportunities, and it's more or less as when you ask what is the potential of Upland. Yeah, and Dirk already answered this question, but I think it's more or less limitless so far. Yeah, the more cities, the more countries, the more regions we explore, the more gamers and players will join the community, and the more partners we include in the game, the more gamification tools we include in the game, the more exciting the game will be. So, I see a very bright future for Upland. Yeah.
Dirk, when we talk about raising capital, I want you to go back and I want you to think about when you first started raising capital for Upland. How did you identify potential investors? Were you just looking for money, or were you looking for a specific type of investor? What was on your mind initially?
So, I have some experience raising capital, right, for different, and I know how hard this can be, right? Because I always say you, as an entrepreneur, you're the business of receiving no's, right? Which is a very common thing. It's not just like that immediately. But in the case of Upland, right, we went the traditional way. We had a few angel investors, from, friends or acquaintances, right, who liked what we were doing. So we were able to build the first prototype. In this case here, it was a little bit special because we said, okay, we need to work with a blockchain. And that was actually the time, when there were a lot of companies like Stefan, right, came up and they said, okay, we have here a fund and we want to deploy it with interesting companies who are using our technology. So we actually did not go down the route that we were going to, let's say, traditional investors during that time. We said, okay, from day one, okay, who of the blockchains, and we were looking at EOS quite extensively, and I was so happy that actually Stefan liked our idea, right, that we said, okay, here's our idea. It sounds a little bit crazy, right? We know that. but would you be interested in coming in, right? So we were a little lucky that we did not have too many pitches during that round to venture capitalists during that first, very first phase, because obviously, you know, we had a small product and the right technology fit here with EOS.
Yeah. Stefan, let's go back to that first interaction with Dirk and his team. Why don't you explain to us what that was like, and then talk to us how that evolved into the due diligence process, what you asked for them, the information, what you did with it, and then how did you end up funding them?
Yeah. So as we are an early stage investment fund, so we place our bets on very early stage companies, so like seed, pre-Series A, Series A, and Upland at this point was also, I think, more like a seed stage company. So that, which means there are not so many documents available for due diligence. So they don't have a lot of papers you look into, not a lot of history. So
right.
the basically you have to check the business plan, and you have to check the assumptions behind the business plan. Is this realistic? Is this a realistic plan? So it's more like the due diligence in this stage of a company with seed or pre-CSA is very checking the business plan and the assumptions. That's all about to know how the company will develop in the future what is the plan behind the numbers. And then also the key part is the team. And what we found here was three very, very great entrepreneurs like Dirk, Mani, and Idan, which know each other also for quite a time. And he was very convinced about the team that they can bring Upland on the level we think it should be. So, and the good thing also for Dirk was, hopefully, that our team as 3C management has been working together for more than 10, 12 years. So Juan and Theo, my partners, we have been working together for a decade now, and we know each other, we trust each other. So everybody has a role in our team. So I'm, as I said, from my background, I'm a lawyer. So I'm checking basically the contracts, the agreement, shareholder agreement, also on. Then one is our finance guy, and Theo at least is one from the tech side, so he has studied technology. So this strong combination, and this is where C3 stands for, the complementary three, so Theo, Juan, and Stefan. So, and I think hopefully Dirk can agree to, we are very lean and fast in our investment process. So and we do a lot of due diligence process internally. Of course, we have involved also external partners like the law firm or whatever. In terms of business due diligence, sometimes we need, or technology due diligence, we need an expert here. But mostly we do it internally. So we are very quick and fast and lean in our process. And then the companies can await feedback from us very quick. And in this regards from Upland, I think we was very quick to say definitely that's a company we want to invest in. And yeah, as Dirk mentioned, we was then the first institutional investor in Upland, and still, I would say, still the largest institutional investor in Upland. But yeah, I think others will come and will join Upland in the future. But we are happy and very proud that we found Upland, and yeah, we believed in this business model and in the team. And as said, the due diligence process is more that you screen the business plan and the team, because not much history and papers available in the data room.
How much time did it take from when you first met them until they received funding? How much time was that?
Oh, I think it was very quick. I think it was only a couple of weeks, I think, Dirk, right?
Wow.
Think,
Dirk,
I think we met in June or so, and then... Yeah. Yeah, and then we announced the round just a little bit later, but I think we had the papers done in September-ish, something, along those lines. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is lean and quick in the VC world. So, but clearly you had knowledge in the area and were willing to act on it. Right? It wasn't you were just gambling.
Yeah. Of course. Of course.
I mean, Block One, obviously, for people who don't know, I mean, EOS raised like over $4 billion. It's Brendan Bloomer, Dan Larimer, David Moss were all part of that team, right?
Exactly. But we don't have gotten the $4 billion for our fund.
Oh, no. So, no, I wouldn't think but
our fund is $18 million. Dollar in size.
Yeah. But so, I mean they were looking for dApps to develop their blockchain, other applications on their blockchain. So they need to work in partnership. They couldn't deploy the money themselves. They had to have many partners. Yeah.
But I think I can honestly can say that, but Upland is by far the most successful, I would say, application on the EOS blockchain so far. What I think. I think it's a very successful story also for B1 and EOS.
Dirk, what has been the biggest challenge for Upland so far, and how have you developed a strategy to deal with that?
To be honest, we were growing much faster than we expected. So managing growth is its own beast in a certain sense, right? So today we are 130 people, and especially, you know, starting last September until January, February, we hired 3 to 5 people a week, right? And we took a pause now because obviously when you grow so fast, right, you start getting some kind of inefficiency into the organization. So that was a challenge, right, to manage the growth, right, also in a certain sense. Then we had a few technology, hurdles to overcome, because when you think about it, blockchain is such a young technology, and EOS itself, you know, the mainnet went only live, I think now 3 years ago or something. So we were one of the first actually applications even on the mainnet. And so when we are, to give you one concrete example, so when we are launching a new city, you know, we have lots of people coming in. They want to purchase at the same time the best properties and so on. So we have a very lots of concurrent workload on the systems. You know, when you have a problem in the traditional technology world, right, you can Google it and there was someone else who had that problem somewhere, right? When you Google that for a blockchain and for a specific blockchain, you know, it's just a big void, right? There's no one. It's
uncharted waters.
It could be uncharted waters. So, of course, and then you have the pressure because we have a big community, right? And then, our servers are not working as expected. You know, the customer experience is not the best. And then you get a lot of pressure from the community. I mean, that we had, you know, when we launched, you know, some of the cities, they were not as smooth as, you know, everyone has expected. But we solved it, right, over time. And now when, you know, as Stefan just said, you know, we just launched, you know, Porto as the last city, or also Rio, where we minted 60 NFTs per second, right? Just when you think about it, right, when you want to do a transaction on blockchain, on the Bitcoin blockchain, it takes it maybe 8 to 20 minutes, just one, right? So, and that was quite a hurdle we had to overcome on the technology side, yeah.
Stefan, what are your thoughts on how C3 adds value to Upland and other companies besides just providing capital?
Yeah, I think the first value add we bring in is, of course, that we provide money. That's all the companies ask for. Yeah, they want to have money. So, of course, then we can say we have network and so on. But money is the first thing they need. So otherwise, they would not approach us. So. In I think what makes us unique is definitely the combination from our team. So the long-standing team. So we work together, as I said, over 10, 15 years now. I know one for 15 years. So we trust each other very well. So the lean processes are very helpful for the startup companies. And we are one of the very few companies or venture capital companies that's focusing only on blockchain technology. So we have, of course, gained enormous experience in this field. So I think they can benefit from our experience. And what we also do is when that comes to another funding rounds, as we see a lot of pitch decks over the last couple of years, I think we give some feedback to the pitch deck. I think Dirk knows that we always open to discuss the pitch deck here. And Of course, as we are active in this sector for a couple of years also, we know a lot of other venture capitalists or interesting parties which are using, which are looking for interesting companies. We can maybe open the doors sometimes for other investors. And yeah, we can provide a list of investors who are also keen to invest in blockchain companies. Yeah. So all this together, I think the three main parts are we are focusing early stage, we are focusing on blockchain technology, and we are a team which was have been working together for a longer time, makes us unique, and then the company can benefit from us. When it comes to CSB or CSC, honestly, the bigger guys come on the table, the bigger capital guys come on the table, the larger capital venture capitalists come on the table. Then, of course, we give up, so to speak, the control a bit. And of course, we stay active in a company, but definitely we are active in the first 12 to 24, 36 months. And then we hand over to bigger guys which have more capital, yeah, definitely.
All right, Dirk, now's the big question. Through all the challenges at Upland, what would you say was the least intelligent thing that you caught yourself doing and thought to yourself, I really wish I had handled this differently?
Specifically of Upland? Oh, you have to think about so many good and small things which are there. I mean, when it comes to personal time management, right? Because that's the thing. Sometimes I may be spending. Sometimes I ask myself, do I spend my time in a very, smart manner, right? So that's something, when you were small, right? You tend to speak to everyone, to pitch your ideas to everyone, and so. But when you grow, you should probably do less of that, right? And also delegate a lot of things. So that's, I think, what I actually changed, especially the last 6-8 months, right? I was really taking almost every call still, because at the beginning, when you're an entrepreneur, right? And you do everything, right? You answer support questions, you handle the community, you do whatever, you put up the ads on Facebook and so on, right? And there's a typical thing now, your role changes, right? And sometimes I think, okay, I should probably maybe should have changed quicker, right? But it's always easier to say that afterwards than while you're actually doing it, right? Because at the beginning you always have the feeling, I have to control things, that you have to, not that I'm a control freak, but I just want to make sure things happen right in the right manner. But when you grow that fast, you really have to start delegating. And so far I think now we're getting actually into good directions here.
When sharing that kind of advice with entrepreneurs, how do you know when it's the right time to delegate? Do those people just appear and you start handing it off, or do you actually go look for those people? What, for you, how did it happen? What advice would you give for entrepreneurs in terms of delegating? When's the right time, or how do you do it?
So I think when you start seeing, I'm a big believer that you need to have something, you do besides just working every day, because you get burned out otherwise, right? So I'm doing myself, there's a lot of sports, right? So that was just very important. When you see that you start skipping your other things, right? Because you say, oh, no, I cannot afford those 2 hours, to go, I swim a lot, right? To go swimming, right? And, just to have this balance. I think that is very important, right? Because then you said, okay, you need to have someone to, you can give some of the work to. But it was very, very important is, of course, when you're a small startup, right? You cannot pay salaries of the top people, right? They would get elsewhere, right? So that is then the challenge, is to find the people, right, who believe in your mission, right, and who are able to grow with you the same way you grow, right? And that is always something. You never do any wrong compromise either by hiring someone who's too expensive too early, because you never satisfy them, right? Because they expect teams and expect budgets or whatever, right? That is, or when you hire someone too junior who cannot really grow with it, right? So that's really, so I think the first 10 hires in your management positions, they're really crucial, right? And that's really have to think twice and always ask others also for advice, get references in and so on. So before you do the hire, because every hire in a small startup can do, unfortunately, a lot of things which are not perfect for it.
Great advice. Dirk, This project has so much potential for future investors, strategic partners, customers, people who need jobs. I mean, this is on a scale most people don't realize. So for people that are interested in connecting with you to be a part of Upland, why don't you tell us how they can get a hold of you?
So you can always connect with me on LinkedIn, because that's still where I still reply. So it's just my name, Dirk Lewitt, and on the Upland, right? I think that's the easiest thing to connect with me. When you want to, as a partner, want to come in, you know, with a partner at upland.me address, right? And otherwise, you know, happy also, I'm speaking lots of events, you know, to also have personal chats.
Now, Stefan, it's my understanding that C3 is currently raising its second fund. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay. So,
in the funding process, yeah.
Well, great. So, how can potential investors or partners or even tech companies get a hold of you if they want to learn more about the opportunities that you have?
Yeah, of course. We have a pitch deck ready. We have a PPM ready. So when investors watch or hear this podcast and are interested to participate in a blockchain sector with an experienced team, definitely they can reach out to us. And as Dirk said, I'm also on LinkedIn. So Stefan Schütze and C3 Management, I think you will find me there. And we have also a website, is c3venture.capital, c3venture.capital, where you can find also information about the team and our existing portfolio. So we have invested in 24 companies already with the C3-1 fund. Yeah, and hopefully soon we can close the second fund, but it takes some time, of course. So we have just started the funding process. And yeah, but when one of the participants here or,
On the website, is there actually a contact tab that they can actually send a message?
It's info at 33venture.capital, info at 33venture.capital. Yeah. You can find there the info email. But as said, you can also find me on LinkedIn. I think that's the easiest way to connect with me. And then I can provide more information and details if they want.
Terrific. Well, thank you both for sharing your time and experience today. It's an incredible project that you have, and the companies that you're funding are very diverse and interesting. So we appreciate you for coming on and sharing your time and your wisdom. And we wish you the best with C3 Ventures, Venture Capital, and with Upland.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Keith. Thanks for the questions. It was very, 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 very great. And excellent to be part of this podcast here.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Funding and Disrupting. Don't forget to visit our sponsor, AuraCo.com, to learn more about working directly with Aura Collective's exclusive technology PR team. They'll help you craft your message, get noticed in the press, and help you get your venture to the funding finish line. Again, you can visit them at www.auraco.com. Keep funding and keep disrupting.